Nazi state tolerates no rival authority over its people. In regimenting German thought, all radio programs emanate from the Department of Propaganda. Every newspaper prints only what the state wants its people to read. And any letter in the German mails is subject to censorship. For in Nazi Germany, every instrument that forms thought, communicates ideas, must be used to glorify the Nazi super state.
To many on the island, the two women were middle-aged spinsters. They were harmless. In the midst of a Nazi occupation, that was enough to ignore the two artists in the farmhouse outside of town. Then things started appearing around the island. White crosses with blood-red lettering, banners in church, small publications that claimed to be the voice of internal dissent. And it drove the Gestapo crazy. There's the argument that art does nothing, that true resistance is only through organization, protests in the street, and all the visible means of dissent. But Claude Cahun and Marcel Moore knew art is never not political. Art is inherently resistance. And in the 1940s, on the British island of Jersey, off the coast of France, during a five-year occupation that caused fear, hunger, and the breakdown of sanity, they used art as their way of encouraging resistance and to stay true to their own. How did small, anonymous art and writing make a dent in the Nazi machine? How did playing on our assumptions about what older women do help them resist for years? And what can we learn from the surrealists on Jersey Island about how to make art as resistance today and tomorrow? From Rebel Yell Creative, this is The Art of Resistance, a podcast about channeling our rage into creation and using writing, music, and all kinds of art to resist the status quo. I'm your host and producer, Amy Lee Lillard, and I'm an author, podcaster, and middle-aged invisible woman who's been obsessing over artists who resisted since I was a kid. And today, I'm looking to make all the weird art and help others do the same. Claude Cahun chose that name at age 25. It was their real name, they said. When asked about gender, Claude said, masculine, feminine, depends on the situation. Claude was a photographer, a writer, a performer. They were known for using their own androgynous image in their work, making haunting images and stories. This was the 1920s, and they were often considered part of the Surrealist movement. But Surrealism, as most art movements that are now considered canon, was heavily male, even aggressively misogynistic. Claude had known Marcel Moore since they were young kids taking vacations on Jersey Island. At an early age, they loved each other, and they became lifelong partners. Funnily enough, their widowed parents eventually married each other, and they also became stepsisters, an important fact later in life. In the midst of the wild 1920s, that partnership wasn't much remarked upon. Queerness was just a fact of life, especially in Paris. But as the 1930s evolved, things changed. Claude was born Jewish. The both of them were queer and defied the norms of gender in clothes and behavior. And when Hitler was elected in Germany in 1933, and laws targeted Jews and queer people, among others, Claude and Marcel made a decision. In 1937, they moved from Paris to the island of their childhood vacations. They bought a farmhouse, and they figured they were safe. They made art. They adopted cats and took them on walks. They wore gender-neutral clothes. Sometimes people would catch a glimpse into their garden and see the two wandering around naked. They didn't necessarily lie about their partnership, but they were legally stepsisters, so that's how they were known. World War II officially started in 1939. By mid-1940, Germany and its allies were winning. They'd taken over most of Europe, including France. And they were threatening the Channel Islands.
Das Oberkommando der Wehrmacht gab am 9. Juni bekannt. Deutsche Seestreitkräfte, darunter die beiden Schlachtschiffe Gneisenau und Scharnhorst, operierten unter Führung des Admirals Marschall im Nordmeer.
The British government evacuated its citizens from Jersey Island. The remaining people surrendered to the Germans. Claude and Marcel were among them. And then the Nazis set up camp. For the next 5 years, the island became a 5-mile-long, 9-mile-wide prison. Because they were cut off from the rest of the world, there were fuel shortages, materials shortages, not enough food, cold and damp winters. So disease and hunger spread. The Nazis made a long list of things that were now punishable by death for those on the island. Owning a radio, not registering as Jewish. Owning a camera, publishing. The Jewish people that did register were deported to the mainland and moved to the camps. POWs from the war in Europe and North Africa were brought to the island for slave labor. Sneaking these starving workers any food was also punishable by death. The German soldiers lived out of a requisitioned hotel for the most part, and they claimed a nearby church as their own. The hotel and the church were not far from Claude and Marcel's farmhouse. When the occupation started, Claude and Marcel chose to start dressing like the other wives on the island. Wellies and scarves, longer hair. Claude didn't register as Jewish, and Marcel didn't admit that she knew German. So the two of them looked and sounded like nobodies. The kind of older woman that can disappear into the background. But then, strange things started appearing.
Bitte verzeih mir, wenn es schon spät ist, doch ich ruf dich an. Soll alles aus sein, ist der Brief dein letztes Wort? Du schreibst mir wörtlich.
In the cemetery near the German's church, there were routinely fresh graves. White crosses would appear on these graves with white lettering. Für sie ist der Krieg. For them, the war is over. Blood red paint splattered across them. In the church, a banner appeared on Sunday morning. Jesus is great, but Hitler is greater. Jesus died for us, but he must die for Hitler. At the local amusement park, stray coins were left around the carousel and other spots that said, Nieder mit Krieg, down with war. It was all Claude and Marcel. It started as almost a dare for themselves. Could they get away with plastering anti-war sentiment right in front of the Germans? Then it shifted. Claude remembered a phrase they'd read back in the early 1930s as many Germans watched in horror at Hitler's ascent. Lieber ein Ende mit Schrecken als Schrecken ohne Ende. Better an end with terror than terror without end. They shortened the phrase to ohne Ende, without end, and Claude and Marcel plastered it everywhere, from walls and buildings to empty cigarette packs left around the island. Right from the start of the occupation, Claude believed that not all the German soldiers stationed on the island were actually Nazis. How could they be? Every war is led by power-hungry leaders, but fought by working-class kids indoctrinated and paid. That's who these soldiers were. They were just boys, and now they were outside the echo chamber of Germany. They were as cut off as everyone else. No news of the war was coming in, even for them. And they were hungry too. They were worn down by the grind of the never-ending occupation. So Claude and Marcel came up with an idea. They started making small publications, which they slipped into uniform pockets and left where soldiers could find them. Flyers, zines, poems, cartoons, collages, all of it made in the voice of fake dissenting soldiers. They were signed Der Soldat ohne Namen, the soldier with no name. Claude and Marcel had kept a radio, a fact punishable by death, and they listened to the BBC for news of the war.
This is London. London calling in the home, overseas, and European services of the BBC and through United Nations Radio Mediterranean.
Marcel translated it into German and would include bits in the publications. They didn't have to make anything up because the tide of the war was soon shifting against Germany. So the two of them wrote out their paper bullets. They went to town and they passed them to other Jersey Islanders in secret. They put them in German letterboxes, inside German magazines, and on the windshields of German cars. The Gestapo was enraged. For years, they hunted down this network because they believed it was an actual resistance network of hundreds of people, led by a mole in the German army. That's how convincing this writing was. Meanwhile, Claude and Marcel kept at it, even when some soldiers moved into their house in 1941 and started eating their food. They continued. Eventually, the two of them made nearly 3,000 publications over 4 years, hiding in plain sight.
Nous vivions tous les deux ensemble, toi qui m'aimais.
When the Nazis set up their laws at the start of the occupation, they also encouraged islanders to inform on their neighbors. Anyone who turned in someone breaking the laws were rewarded. And in the midst of desperate, hungry times, there were many informers seeking that reward. One of them reported Claude and Marcel. They never found out who. It might have been the lady at the stationery shop where they got the paper for their tracks. The Gestapo didn't believe it at first. There was no way these two old ladies could be behind the resistance network, that they could actually be the network, that they had played a massive trick on the German army. They were arrested in 1944. On the way out of their house, Marcel grabbed a handful of pills. They swallowed the pills on the way to prison, hoping it was enough for suicide. It wasn't, but it put them in a coma, long enough to miss the last ship of Jewish people and other deportees going to the death camps. Claude and Marcel recovered. They went to trial, and they were sentenced to death. And they stayed in prison for months, waiting for that sentence.
Des amants
désunis. And while they were there, they met other prisoners, some of whom were German soldiers. One of them had found Claude and Marcel's publications. He had read them, and he had agreed with them, and he had found the courage to desert the army, even though they were on an island with nowhere to run. And this young man wasn't the only one. The soldier told Claude and Marcel that the majority of the army on the island, and probably elsewhere, were done. They wanted to run. They were just waiting for their moment. In May of 1945, the island was liberated. Claude and Marcel were free. Like I said at the beginning of this episode, there's the argument that art does nothing. That true resistance is only done by collective action, big groups, loud protests. But Claude knew the lie of that argument. Their mere existence was resistance. Just being a queer person at the time was a political act. In the 1920s, being a woman and being a surrealist was resistance. Being a person who wore men's clothing was resistance. Being a Jewish woman who hid in plain sight was resistance. Claude and Marcel's art didn't end the war. It didn't cause an uprising on Jersey Island. It didn't turn history in a massive way. So how do you measure the impact of their art? For that German soldier, and others they didn't meet, maybe reading those publications made them realize they weren't crazy, that their natural empathy wasn't something to destroy, as the Nazis had told them. Maybe those soldiers took that lesson back to their homes after the war. Maybe they remembered it for the rest of their lives and passed it down to their families, breaking intergenerational stories wide open. Even if Claude and Marcel hadn't met that German soldier in prison and learned that their work did indeed reach people who needed to read it, the act of making art saved their lives. After the war, Claude wrote that even though their actions could have killed them, making their publications and other art on Jersey Island was a means of staying sane in insane times. "The only thing that made me happy," they wrote, "was my papers. My madman's project. I was taking action. It was an open door, a hope. At the same time, it was an obsession." That's one of the beautiful things about art as resistance. It helps you save yourself in the midst of moments that try to destroy you. What can we learn from Claude Cahun and Marcel Moore? What can we do as creative people in this fucked up world? Because we are all creative, and we can all find ways to resist. Claude and Marcel did all this on their own. They didn't have a handbook on how to resist. They didn't even have enough to eat. But they did it anyway. They banked on human empathy, on the fact that wars are fought by ideologues and autocrats, but many times the people underneath them are just trying to survive. Sociologist James C. Scott talks about a category of resistance that is anonymous and barely seen. He says it's foot dragging, evasion, false compliance, pilfering, feigned ignorance, slander, and sabotage. He says, quote, "Everyday forms of resistance make no headlines. Vital territory is being won and lost here too. Thousand upon thousands of individual acts of insubordination and evasion create a political or economic barrier reef." For me, The lesson from Claude and Marcel is that there's no such thing as too small when it comes to art and resistance. There's no such thing as pointless art. Art is resistance and survival. So here's what we do from here. We lean in to the things that we think are drawbacks. I'm a 48-year-old woman, and increasingly I'm invisible. But as Claude and Marcel showed, that can be a superpower. We understand the power of using our voice and making our art for our own survival. And we don't think of this as short-term. Even if we get a new administration down the road, even if we miraculously come out of this terrifying, tyrannical moment, there is so much to fight against and for. This is a long-term commitment to making art for a better world.
Il ne m'aime plus, c'est du passé, n'en parlons plus.
The Art of Resistance is a podcast for the artists, the lovers of art, and people who want to resist but don't know how. These stories are designed to help us find inspiration from the past and empower us all to find some hope for today and tomorrow. I'm Amy Lee Lillard, and I wrote, narrated, and produced this show. And there's so much more to this story. At rebelyellcreative.com, you'll find sources, images, and videos for this episode and all the others. Plus, at rebelyellcreative.com, there's a full resistance library with posters and art to download, places to explore online, and journals and kits to get in the mail. Here's an easy way to get more art as resistance. Sign up for the free newsletter at rebelyellcreative.com and get stories and tips every week. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next time.